Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell, and I'm going to be joined alongside Scotty Bordeline. This is our last. We made it through, and I know it's kind of weird. It's almost the end of February, and we're doing a best of the past decade. But when you have seven riders that you have to go through, it takes a little bit to get through everybody. But we saved the best for last, or at least that's what we're going to tell Scotty. Anyway.
Hardly.
As we welcome Scotty Bordeline onto the podcast. Scotty also does the basketball podcast of Mid-America with me. He's a writer for Whole Hog Sports, and he is a basketball aficionado. And Scotty, best of the decade. I can't wait. We were also talking about where we were at the beginning of this decade, and we weren't always covering the Razorbacks considering we're the two youngest guys on staff.
Right. Yeah, I think in 2010... I was like a junior in high school and going into my senior year of high school. So it's quite the decade.
But that doesn't mean that we are not aware of the great players that Arkansas had this decade. And
sure.
And you can also talk about the great stories that you have written over this decade. And we're going to get to Scotty's stories at first. But what I really wanted to start this podcast off with was a best of decade team. So Scotty and I have broken it down. We have already done our draft.
And I think we've already mutually decided that my team is going to run yours out of the gym.
There was no mutual about this.
Okay, I thought we agreed on that.
No. We'll post this to the forums on wholehogsports.com. We'll also post this to Twitter. We want your feedback here. Who did we forget that you're saying should be on this team? Who has the better team? We want to know. So let us know, and Team Campbell can run Scotty's out of the gym. So how this worked is that they had to play in the decade. So from 2010 all the way through 2019. Now, Scotty and I, we didn't set this parameter, but if you're thinking about stats-wise, it doesn't matter. So it's like their entire career. It's not like what they just did in the decade. So for an example, Mason Jones, although he is putting up numbers in 19 and 20 that are insane, it just counts all his entire career as a whole up to this point, rather than just what he did in the once full season that he had that was in the past decade. If I confused you, it's okay. I'm sorry. Just enjoy the next 15 minutes or so as Scotty and I go back and forth on our team. So Scotty got the first overall pick on the all-decade Arkansas basketball squads. Scotty, who'd you go with?
Went with Bobby Portis. I thought that was an easy, relatively easy first pick for me. He was SEC Player of the Year. His final season at Arkansas was, took Arkansas to the NCAA tournament, took them to the second round of the tournament.
Where they lost to, guess who?
Yeah, let's not go there.
North Carolina!
I thought that was a fairly easy pick, for me anyway. Bobby was an immediate impact guy as soon as he stepped on campus, and he blossomed between his freshman and sophomore year and became arguably one of the better players in the country.
One of the only players to win Player of the Year during this decade, was the only player to win Player of the Year in this decade. No doubt, a no-brainer. Bobby Portis with the first overall pick. Portis was so good. He could shoot the three-pointer relatively well. He could take you away from the basket, and he could finish. He was a approachable big man, and that is why he is still in the NBA to this day.
Yeah, in this day and age in basketball, and I kind of think this way, especially like when I'm playing video games. Like I've got 2K17. Like I'm not up to date on like video games and stuff.
But I'll do
like the association and then do a fantasy draft. And I like my five to be able to space the floor a little bit.
And the problem with video games is if you keep updating every single year, like the progress that you made on your My Player or whatever, it goes away.
Yeah.
And so like that's no fun. Okay. So Bobby Portis, I thought that was a good first overall pick. Now, second was tough, so second goes over to me now.
So we did this, like, you did a snake.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So I got the first pick, Seth got the next two.
So I get the next two, and I'm going to go with my second overall pick as Mason Jones. I think that Mason has set himself apart as a Player of the Year candidate this year, one of the only other players Arkansas has had that has done that. He is a prolific scorer beneath the basket, which is unique in today's college basketball scene. He can take contact. He's going to take it to you at the hole. He's going to make you foul him. As Scotty said, in one of our podcasts, in the basketball podcast in Mid-America, it draws almost eight fouls a game.
Eight fouls per 40 minutes played.
And
second nationally.
To lead, he leads the league this year in scoring with 20.8 points a game. Mason Jones is the number two pick. He is going to run the point for my team, and you'll understand why here in a little bit. But Mason Jones is going to be my point guard. He's going to take it to the basket, and he's going to foul Bobby Portis out of this game.
He's going to be too ball dominant. You're going to lose.
Okay. Well, I also, don't worry, Scotty, because if you do want to pound it down low, I know how you said you like to spread it out, but I got the longest guy of the past decade. With my third pick, I'm going to go with a guy that's also in the NBA right now for the Chicago Bulls, Daniel Gafford. Gafford is going to anchor my team down low. He is going to be an elite finisher around the rim for when Mason Jones, you know, maybe throws it up and doesn't get it to go in. Don't worry, I'll have Daniel Gafford there to clean it up.
I see putback dunks galore there.
Some alley-oops action going. We got a fantastic pick-and-roll team. Can you imagine Mason Jones this year with Daniel Gafford in his prolific season? Pick-and-roll.
That's a disaster for opposing defenses.
Yeah, come on, bring Bobby Portis out here. Let's go for it. Pick-and-roll. So I went with Daniel Gafford. And as you can see, I have some stats for Gafford real quickly. 16.9 points as a freshman. This was his freshman year. No, this was his sophomore year, sorry. 8.7 rebounds and 7 assists a game.
He's another guy that was an immediate impact as soon as he stepped on campus.
For sure. So I got a guard and a center. Scotty's got his Bobby Portis down. What are you going after this with number 2 and number 3, Scotty?
Yeah, so like if you mention one of these guys, you almost have to mention the other in the same breath. So with my next two picks, I went with Jalen Barford and Daryl Macon.
It's insane that those guys were on the same team with a so-called Daniel Gafford. That's an insane matchup. Right,
those two, I got to – so when I got hired at Whole Hog, it was December 2017. That was Daniel Gafford's freshman year, and that was Jalen and Daryl's last season at Arkansas. Those two guys were a joy to watch, and just kind of like for different reasons, but both of them have like this dog mentality that like, if I'm hot, I'm going to let you know about it, and then I'm going to step on your throat. I'm going to bury you. And Jalen, I think, you know, maybe in the guard category is the best finisher of the decade. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think it's even close.
Mason Jones is acrobatic
around the rim, hyper efficient once he got into the lane. And then Daryl was a guy that could, you know, like I always think about that the last time Arkansas was at Georgia. You know, Arkansas goes to Georgia in a couple weeks, and Daryl just went absolutely berserk in that double overtime win at Georgia. I think he scored like 25 points in like the second half and the two overtimes. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember watching that game.
Those two guys, I don't think you can really mention one without the other, but they've got unique qualities that make them, you know, my second and third picks. I like those two guys.
I really, really appreciated Jalen Barford and what he did on the offensive end. Like you said, he's an elite finisher and quicker, I think, than Mason Jones.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And we talked about in the last basketball podcast in Mid-America, if you haven't listened to it, I really encourage you to, is Mason Jones finishes below the rim. Barford was an above the rim
type of flash. Yeah, he could do either or. And I think what made Jalen kind of unique is he was either 6'3", 6'4", and kind of a big body guard.
Yeah, he was.
But dude, he was quick on his feet, and he was explosive. He could elevate. And then what I really liked about Jalen too is, between his first year at Arkansas and his second, he really, really became a consistent perimeter threat.
Yeah.
And I think that made him one of the better guards in the league.
When their first year they got here, because they were JUCO guys, so their junior years, Macon was the three-point shooter of the group, and Barford was the driver. Like that, they had their roles, and they stayed in those roles. And then their second year that they hired, they blossomed into both of them could do the other fairly well. Before we move on, best free throw shooter, Daryl Macon or Mason Jones?
It's a good question. I might go with Daryl.
I'm going.
I think Daryl's a killer.
I'm going with Macon because you mentioned that last time Arkansas went to Georgia and you have that memory in your mind. I have the Vanderbilt game.
Yeah, Arkansas
down by
veins.
Down
yeah.
by 8 with a less than a minute to go and they end up winning and ice in my veins. Yeah, I have that in my head. And if the game's on the line, like Mason Jones shoots free throws really well. And we're not taking anything away from that. Game's on the line, though. The one guy out of the past decade that I'm putting on the line, Daryl Macon.
He was really good in pick and rolls, too. Like, he's obviously, like I said, he was a kind of a killer offensively as far as scoring the ball. But he was really good in pick and roll, really adjusted to the way that teams were defending ball screens against him his late in his career at Arkansas. He could also set teammates up, too.
Yeah. Here you go. Jalen Barford, 17.9 points a game in his last season, 3.9 rebounds and 2.5 assists. Daryl Macon, 16.8 points a game, 2.9 rebounds and 3.9 assists. So Macon had a few more assist numbers and just a hair under a point less than Barford. Both of those guys, fantastic pickups. All right, so Scotty's got three now. With his first overall pick, Scotty picked up Bobby Portis. Then he went with Lightning and Thunder there with Jalen Barford and Daryl Macon. So I've got to pick up two now. I went as my number one overall pick, Mason Jones. Then went with Daniel Gafford. Number three, I'm going to go with a guy that played at the same time as good old Bobby Portis, and that's Michael Qualls. Qualls, I thought, had a career as kind of a role player, maybe fluctuating between the NBA and the D League or I guess it's the G League now, mm-hmm. until he injured himself. He tore his Achilles? No, not his Achilles, his
ACL. He tore an ACL in a workout with the Suns, I believe.
And so when he tore that ACL, he hasn't really recovered. I think he went to play in Europe or overseas. Let's put it that way, because I'm not quite for sure where he went. And Mr. Walk on Air came back and tried out for another team, I believe, a few years ago, but I really think that ACL injury for a guy that was as explosive as Michael Qualls was, to have that injury kind of hurt him. And that was his game. Talk about a guy that could play above the rim. That is where Michael Qualls thrived. But I also thought in his last year, Bobby Portis' sophomore year, and I believe that was his junior year, he ended up leaving early, but he really did improve in the outside game. You know, he's not going to be your Isaiah Joes or Daryl Macon's in shooting the three.
Yeah,
Jalen Barford.
He was viable from out there.
But
no doubt.
That first year when Bobby Portis was a freshman and he was a sophomore, he was going to take it to the rack and have to finish around the rim. That's where he made his money. And then he started to be able to move and he could shoot the three a little bit. And so I really appreciate his ability to spread the floor. In my team, I'm going to have to play him at the four, but I'm okay with that because I got a quickness out there and going to elevate and play above the floor again. Another guy that can go to the rim, throw it up there, and then if it doesn't get finished, Daniel Gafford can throw it.
Yeah, no joke. Your team might blow mine away. Offensive rebounding.
Hey, there we go. Offensive rebounding. Some stats. Qualls, his last season, 15.9 points a game, 5.3 rebounds, 1.7 assists. We're going to be a rebounding machine with Qualls and Gafford as well. And then with four, number four pick, I went with what I believe is the best shooter to come through in the decade in Isaiah Joe. He's injured right now, and that might hurt him, and he might be able to come back for another year. And if he comes back for another year, he's breaking some three-point records. He's already up there at the top of Arkansas list, and that's only in 2 years. He's going to come back, break some records, and he's just got the most pure stroke I have seen out of anybody in the past decade come out of the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, no joke. I mean, he comes in his first year and breaks a program record for threes in a season. I mean, he was a kid is special. I agree with you. I think he's the best. I think he's hands down the best shooter of the decade.
And there were some good shooters this decade. Some of them we'll get to here in a second, mm-hmm. but I think that he is a key to a team that he doesn't have to be the MVP, the most valuable player. But as you've seen on a team like Arkansas with Mason Jones can take over a game, but without Isaiah Joe, like everybody focuses on Jones. Isaiah can just spread the floor so much. Just his presence creates lanes to drive through in the defense.
Yeah, that's where Arkansas is missing him right now.
Dang, straight, didn't it? All right, so I picked up this round, recap, Michael Qualls and Isaiah Joe. So I've got four. Got Mason Jones at the guard. I picked up Daniel Gafford to play center. Michael Qualls is my four. Isaiah Joe is going to be my shooting guard. But that was my four picks. All right, Scotty, you get to round out your top five right now.
Yeah, so my fourth pick is kind of a personal favorite for me.
Okay.
And he's probably, I mean, unless you're like really into Arkansas basketball, you might not think of his name.
Okay.
But I went with Cody Clark.
Okay.
I really liked Cody Clark. And I remember right after I first got into writing, I had a job writing for free, actually, at SB Nation for Arkansas Fight. And I wrote a story about Cody Clark and why I thought he was Arkansas's best all-around player when he was here. He could step out and shoot it. He can bang on the interior. Like, he's a little bit of an undersized forward, but he could rebound pretty well. I think he averaged close to 6 rebounds his last year at Arkansas. And then for a forward to average nearly 3 assists a game in a season, I think that says a lot about just the different areas, all the different aspects of the game that Cody Clark impacted. So I'm going with him. And I think he was a junior college guy. I immediately just kind of gravitated toward his game because he was so smooth and he was really court savvy, had a really high basketball IQ. So I went with Cody Clark with my fourth pick. And then my fifth pick, kind of rounding out my starting five, I went with the number two shooter of the decade. I went with Dusty Hannes.
And that's a really good pickup.
Yeah, I'm going to bomb you from the perimeter.
I got good defenders. I don't know what you're talking about. So Dusty Hannes, I was really impressed. He was the king of the in-the-lane floater.
Yeah.
His last year, because he came in as a shooter. Like, that's
really
what he was.
Really developed his game off the bounce, and that's why he's making a living playing basketball.
Yeah, he's still sticking around.
Yeah.
He's
is putting up some numbers with the Memphis Hustle right now.
You don't stick around in the G League. Like, those guys will – NBA teams, they'll keep you there for a year or two, and then if you're just producing okay – they're going to get you out of there and give an opportunity to somebody else that's younger than you to come up to see if they can make a team. They don't keep you around for 3-4 years on a G League team unless they really think that you're a viable option. Dusty Hannes is a viable option. I don't understand why he hasn't gotten more opportunities to move up, but, I mean, things happen. But like you said, he's making a living playing basketball and making a living playing basketball in America. There's something to be said for that.
Yeah, he's putting up some really nice numbers. I think he was in the G League. I think he made like the first half all-star roster, mm-hmm. I think, if I'm not mistaken. He's been lights out, and I think he's going to get – I mean, I think he's played in the NBA a little bit.
Yeah, I think he has been called up.
With the Grizzlies, but he's going to get his opportunity one of these days. I mean, if he keeps bombing teams from 4 or 5 feet behind the already extended three-point line, he's gonna get a shot, and he's – you know, he's not just a jump shooter. Like, dude can get in the lane, and that's kind of what makes this pick kind of doubly dangerous, is that he's so good off the bounce. Maybe he may have been a little bit of a liability defensively, but I think his athleticism is a little bit better than what is portrayed sometimes, you know. So knockdown 3-point shooter, guy that can get to the kind of, you know, maybe get into the lane and finish at a pretty good rate. And I really like Dusty. I thought I got a steal with that fifth pick.
Dusty is a very high value pick there at number five. I would have scooped him up if it came back to me, but it did not. So I had a few options here, and we're going to get to our sixth man and honorable mention after this for sure. But I had a few options. I couldn't necessarily decide. I thought my team was pretty good. The thing that's really apparent in all of this, Scotty, is Arkansas lacked true stars at the big man position. They had Bobby Portis and they had Daniel Gafford, and they had one other guy that's probably, his name's going to be mentioned here in a second. But besides that, there weren't just a huge efficient shooters, or not shooters, huge efficient big men on this Arkansas Razorback in this decade for
right.
the Razorbacks.
Right.
All right, so let's go Rodney Clark. That's a name. He transferred out of here, went to Butler, and played for a pretty good Butler team. And Brad Stevens was still the coach at that time, correct, of the Butler Bulldogs?
I think so.
I think he was as well. So he wanted to go play for the future coach of the Boston Celtics. I mean, that's not too shabby. Rodney holds the record. He scored the most points in a game, 53.
Yeah, hit 54 against Alcorn 54. State, yeah.
54 against Alcorn State. When this guy got gone, he was gone. There might be some debate for him to be the second best three-point shooter. I'll go and say, you know, I want to fight for my guys that are on my team, sure, Scotty, here. Sure. But also at the same time, you know, I can't turn a blind eye to Dusty Hannesson. So I'll say he's a close second as the best three-point shooter in this decade. But he was almost a step before. Really, the three-point line started becoming evolved in like 2015. And then really on from there with the Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors with Klay Thompson as well. They took it and they're like, everybody's like, wait a minute. If we can shoot this percentage from the three-point line, three is more than two. We should do that more often. And that really wasn't the case in the early 2010s when Rodney Clark was on the team. But he would still spread the floor out, still get you shots. Slightly worried about him on the defensive end, but I like my pick there with Rodney Clark rounding it out.
Yeah, I think you got some good value with that one too.
And then we're going to go with a sixth man. So our sixth man, there were a few options for me. Marshawn Powell stood out, which you might hear his name mentioned as well later. Courtney Fortson stood out as well. And then, so these are kind of some of the honorable mentions, I guess, for me. And then I really liked a guy like Jabril Durham, and he stood out to me. He was a really good with the ball. He wasn't the most efficient scorer, but in order to get people the ball, one of the best. I think Jalen Harris is up there as well as one of the best facilitators. Anthlon Bell, BJ Young, some of the guys I considered. But my sixth man, I'm going with a guy that was named a preseason All-SEC player. He did not win the postseason award, but he was preseason. Stepped up big in the absence of Bobby Portis, and that's Moses Kingsley.
Solid.
Kingsley finished in his sophomore season with 15.9 points a game, 9.3 rebounds, and 1.2 assists. I think that it would be remiss if we didn't mention Kingsley as one of the top players.
Yeah, Moses was a quality guy for sure.
Not one of, like, Daniel Gafford, Bobby Portis are on a different level for sure. As you can see that, you know, they were picked up by NBA teams. Moses wasn't, but Moses provided value to a team that had Dusty Hannes on it that could really spread you out. So you had Hannes from the perimeter and Moses could finish down below.
Yeah, I thought Moses had a pretty decent mid-range game. Like, I thought, like, between the elbows, I thought he was pretty solid. Probably about the only reason I didn't take him was because he was, you know, he was a more of a kind of a back-to-the-basket type guy and wasn't like super efficient that way.
Yeah.
And I think he's the guy. I think that obviously I'm biased because I picked someone else instead of Moses, but I thought my guy ran the floor a little better.
All right. Who is your guy?
It's Marshawn Powell.
Sixth man, Marshawn Powell for Scotty.
Yeah. And I kind of debated whether I wanted to take another guard and just kind of turn this hypothetical game into a track meet that you didn't want any part of.
I did not.
And so I could have, I debated a guy like Courtney Fortson, who was a walking triple double. Mm-hmm. Kai Madden, who I thought when he was at Arkansas, I know you didn't take him for a number of reasons, but I thought he had among the best court vision of almost any guard that played at Arkansas. He was terrific, kind of a bigger guard who could, you know, he could hurt you from the perimeter at times. And then BJ Young was another guy I considered. He was just didn't have a jump shot, nothing really, but virtually everything else he kind of had it. He was so good, just kind of slithering, sneaking his way to the rim for scores. But yeah, I went with Marshawn Powell. He's a guy that can, you know, he can step out on the perimeter, pull Daniel Gafford away from the rim. And I know you remember that picture that surfaced when Marshawn Powell dunked over that Mississippi State player but got called for an offensive foul. That's what's coming at you.
Yay. Okay, so let's recap here. Scotty with the first overall pick, and he went, so his team looks like Bobby Portis, Jalen Barford, Daryl Macon, Cody Clark, Dusty Hannes, and Marshawn Powell coming as the sixth man. My team looks like Mason Jones, Daniel Gafford, Michael Qualls, Isaiah Joe, Rodney Clark, and Moses Kingsley as my sixth man. Tweet at us, @NWA Scotty, @SethCampbell5, what you think respond to us. We'll also put this on the forums on wholehogsports.com. We are all up for debate, but what do you think? And Scotty, let's be real. My team's going to run your team. Yeah.
I don't believe that's true.
You got Bobby Portis, but I got Mason Jones, Daniel Gafford going the pick and roll. You want to guard the pick and roll? Focus on that. I'm going to throw it out to my shooters and Isaiah Joe and Rodney Clark.
You want to talk about shooters?
On either side of the wing.
Dog, I got shooters.
And then I got the athleticism. So you want to shut down
everybody on my team can shoot.
Marshawn Powell.
Dude, got a mid-range game. He could take you out to the top of the key, put one in your eye.
Okay, sure. Cody Clark is...
Everybody on my team can shoot.
That's fine, but you can't take it anywhere near, so good luck shooting 30%, because you're not getting in the painted area. Not with Moses Kingsley and Daniel Gafford.
Tell Jalen Barford he's not getting the rim.
Daniel Gafford has the athleticism and the length to block any of those shots. Let's just rewind to a few windmills that Mr. Gafford had. And oh, by the way, just... Mr. Walk on Air, by the way, is on my team too. So I think I won. Scotty thinks he won. Let us know who you thought won. All right, Scotty. Before we head on out, you've been writing, you said, since December of 2017.
Yep. With Whole Hog.
For Whole Hog Sports. That's a few years there for you to have some fantastic stories, which, you know, all of yours are fantastic, Scotty. But what are some of the ones that stuck out to you from this past decade?
I think the first story that I wrote that I was like, I was almost obsessed with it while I was writing, was for the Hogs Illustrated football preview. It was before the 2018 season, and it was, you know, going into that season, I think a lot of people had some pretty high expectations for Scooter Harris, and he was kind of leading that linebacker group. And, you know, it was like the day of my interview with him. We went over and talked to him. It was like in late May or early June, and went over and talked to him. But before I met with him, you know, I kind of you do your research, obviously, when you're kind of gathering questions and whatnot. And I went to his profile on Arkansas's roster and clicked on it and realized that he grew up. Obviously, I knew he grew up in New Orleans, but I'm not like, I don't know like when his birthday is, like how old he was. I just kind of realized that he lived through Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, being a New Orleans kid. And so I asked him about his Hurricane Katrina story, and I was kind of blown away by the story that he told. He said he remembered, you know, kind of sitting in standstill traffic trying to get out of the city for hours, you know, in his family's car. And there were, you know, they went to, I think him and his family went to Mississippi, and then they went to Houston, and then to Galveston. And there were times when, you know, his family was cooped up living with other folks for like, I think other family members, there were like 50 of them in a house, which is,
wow,
like that's crazy. Some day, like, and they obviously didn't have all of the amenities there because of the situation, and they would have to like bathe in cold water, and they would sleep in, you know, classrooms at schools, and schools opened their doors and allowed families to kind of come stay in there. And, you know, that was I can't even imagine. And I'm pretty grateful that he trusted me enough to, you know, kind of share his story with me. And then, you know, fast forward however many years later, you know, before I think his freshman season, his dad passed away. And that, you know, that kind of hurt Scooter quite a bit. But he just grew up so much by the time, you know, throughout his whole Arkansas career. Like, he came in, I think, as a freshman, like his first significant playing time was after I think Dre Greenlaw got hurt at home against number one Alabama. Scooter comes in, forces a fumble, kind of has an immediate impact, and then he just progressively, year after year, his role grew. Ultimately became, you know, one of the better players in the SEC.
That's really good to put so much time we just think about these athletes on the field and to put them outside of the field and the stuff that they've gone through and to dig deeper, because it is so easy to talk about, well, what happened on the field? What are your expectations for the next year? And how is this team getting better? And to go deep like that, that is something that sticks out.
Yeah, stuff. And that's what I like to do, because I think sometimes we have a tendency to like just say a person is by what his statistics are, and that's just, it's not the case, man. Like everybody's got a story. Like, and I one of the things I like to do is I like to like dig a little bit deeper, like kind of figure out who these people are, where they came from, who they were influenced by, kind of like what drives them. Like one of my favorite questions to ask guys is like, what is your why? Like what drives you? What makes you want to get up every day and be better? And what kind of an impact do you want to make? Like, and you ask that question to different guys, 9 times out of 10, they're going to give you an answer that just kind of drives home a little bit. And another response that I got from that question is I asked Johnny Gibson, who played offensive line for Arkansas a couple years ago, I asked him what his why is, and he immediately pointed to his left forearm, and he had a tattoo of the number 19. And it wasn't just a 1 and a 9. Like the 1 was made up of family members' names, and the 9 was made up of family members' names, and the 19 was, Johnny was the 19th grand, his I think it was his grandmother's night, he was his grandmother's 19th grandchild. And so he was the youngest. He was the youngest of the bunch, I believe. And so, like, even that tattoo, I just wanted to ask him about it, because why do you have the number 19 tattooed on you? And so there's a story behind almost everything. And then probably the most fun and interesting story that I've had the chance to put together was the story I wrote on Casey Martin's tattoo that's on his, I think it's on his right arm. On his wrist, he's got Roman numerals that signify his father's, so his grandfather on his dad's side, the day that he died, his grandfather was a really big baseball fan, and but they never met. They never met, I don't think. I could be mistaken. But they both loved baseball, just absolutely loved it. And right above that, right above the Roman numerals, was roses. There were 3 or 4 roses on that tattoo. And roses are Casey Martin's mom, Jennifer's favorite flower. So I think it was before the regional tournament last year at Baum Stadium. You know, you kind of have that big group media day where everybody is in the dugout available for interviews. And I just straight up asked him, I was just like, tell me about this tattoo. And he got the roses for his mom, because his mom had battled thyroid cancer in the past. And right above the roses was kind of the praying hands, kind of like the normal praying hands that you see. And that's just kind of a tribute to his faith. And that tattoo meant so much to Casey. And he'd been wanting to get it for a really long time. And his mom kind of knew that he was kind of itching to get a tattoo of some kind to kind of symbolize her bout with cancer. But when she saw the finished product, he sent her a picture of the tattoo when it was finished. She like broke down in tears. And that was probably the most memorable interview I've had was with Casey's mom. It was, I think before game 1 or game 2 of the Super Regional series with Ole Miss. And it was like probably 3 hours before first pitch, but she is at Baum Stadium watching Casey just kind of do his thing, like just pregame taking ground balls, taking batting practice. She didn't want to miss anything. She just kind of wants to get a feel for how Casey's doing, like how he's moving, how he might play that day. She didn't want to miss a single thing. And she called me. She was walking after batting practice from Baum to Chick-fil-A on the corner of Razorback and MLK. And we talked for a good while. And I told her that when I interviewed Casey like two or three times for this story, like just any chance that Casey was available, I just kind of wanted to know just a little bit more, just kind of had some follow-ups for him. He told me in one of the interviews for this story that his mom was, you know, the strongest person in his life. And so I told her that Casey said that, and I said, you know, kind of what's the feeling of hearing him say that. And there was like a really long pause on the other end of the line, and she started crying. And like, dude, it was just a really fantastic interview. And I ended up writing that story the night after Arkansas, I think, lost game two, because I wanted to get that story out. And there wasn't absolutely a guarantee that Arkansas was going to go to the College World Series. So if I didn't write it then, it might have to wait until about this time this year. And I didn't want to do that. Like this story was so much fun putting together, and it was so interesting. It was kind of so emotional and relevant that I wanted to get it out. And so I stayed up until like 4 o'clock in the morning writing it. And it published at, I think, 5 or 5:30. And I didn't go to sleep. I don't think I went to sleep until like 6 o'clock that morning. I was so ready for that story to get out. And then once it did, it just, the reaction to it was unlike any other story I've ever written. That was hands down my favorite story I've written.
That's awesome. That is just so cool that the impact that you can have when you write a story to tell other people's stories. It's insane. And then the fact that people, we are so appreciative as sports writers that people will share with us anything that they share with us.
Absolutely.
Like that. That's freaking awesome. Scotty, do you have any more before I wrap it up here?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like last football season, you know, I like to get to know the freshmen. And Treylon Burks was obviously, he's one of he may have been the prize of the last recruiting class that Chad Morris brought in. And I think it was during preseason practice, you know, Arkansas kind of put together this, it was almost like a Players Tribune type thing where a photographer followed, you know, Treylon Burks around the practice field. And one of the pictures, you know, he captioned all of the photos. Like there were pictures taken of him, but he like saw the photos and he captioned it. And one of the pictures that was taken was of the back of his, I think it was at the back of his helmet. And it kind of had, you know, like a label on the back that said Burks, because obviously they're not wearing jerseys with their names on the back. So you got to identify them somehow. And so Burks was written on the back of, laminated on the back of his helmet. And in that Players Tribune type deal, Treylon kind of mentioned how much his grandfather meant to him. And Treylon wound up taking his grandfather's last name. And his grandfather's name is Joe Burks. He was really, really, really well liked down in Warren. He was a, you know, kind of a janitor / maintenance man / bus driver at Warren. Everybody loved the man. And Treylon basically was raised by him, by his grandfather. And, you know, he just basically set out to basically rep his grandfather and, you know, kind of carry on that legacy of the Burks name. And it was really cool just listening to Treylon kind of talk about him. And his grandfather, I think, died about 4 years ago. And so that kind of weighed a little bit on Treylon, but it also made him push a little bit more Traylon's obviously a fantastic kid, but just I talked to Traylon. I tried to talk to Traylon's mom, but I couldn't get a hold of her. But I talked to Warren's football coach, Bo Hembree, who knew Joe Burks really well. And that turned into a kind of a really fascinating story that almost kind of caught fire, similarly to the way that Casey Martin's story did. But Traylon's so unique because he's obviously he's a freak athletically. He wears like size 5X gloves, which who in the world does that? And he busts through a pair of gloves like once a week. And he's also the guy that's, you know, he's going to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and watch Gunsmoke. And then on Saturdays, he's going to run by you and he hasn't scored a touchdown yet, but you know, he's going to make big impactful plays. And so that was another kind of emotional story, kind of family oriented story that, you know, I really enjoy putting together.
Good stuff. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks for sharing that. And we will have links to all of those stories in the notes. So make sure to follow Whole Hog on wherever you're listening to this, whatever podcasting app or whatever you're listening. And then in the story notes that we will put with this story, you will find some links to those stories that Scotty is talking about so you can read up and really understand what the story is about and then the background information that Scotty is telling you. Great stuff, Scotty. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Really appreciate it.
There was several more that I could have gotten into, but those are the ones that really stand out. Like Scooter telling me his story and then Traylon and then Casey Martin. That's kind of, you know, those are three that probably stand out. Like maybe the Isaiah Nichols story that I did for, I think it was my first cover story. He was, you know, he signed out of Springdale High. And I mean, you can go back and read the story, but Isaiah is another one of those kids that had an untraditional upbringing. I think he didn't start playing football until I think he was in like ninth or 10th grade once he got to Springdale. And then 3 years later, he's playing at Arkansas. So he's kind of a unique story, terrific kid. And he was absolutely a monster at Springdale High. And I got to cover his senior year. And so that was, it was fun getting to know him and, you know, some of the people in his family and the people that were around him on a daily basis. They just can't say enough good things about him.
Awesome stuff. All right. Like I said, you can follow Scotty on Twitter at NWA Scotty. He tweets out all of his stories, or you can find all of his stories on wholehogsports.com. Subscribe now so you don't miss any more of those great Scotty Borderline stories. I want to thank you for joining us and for doing and staying with us through this entire podcast series. 7 people reviewing the decade. It started off with Tom Murphy, and he hit some of the highlights of, you know, he gets to cover the games, and he hit some of the highlights of Arkansas football from the Sugar Bowl and the Hunter Heave, and covered the College World Series in 2018 when Arkansas was within a foul ball of winning it, and all the way down to Scotty and, you know, the profile stories that Scotty's able to do. And you know, all of these stories are available on wholehogsports.com, so make sure to check them out. Scotty, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, man.
All right. This podcast is produced and edited for Airship by me, Seth Campbell. Make sure to like and subscribe. We really appreciate your likes and subscribes. It helps grow the podcast, helps other people find our podcast. One more time, I said you can follow Scotty at NWA Scotty online. You can follow me at Seth Campbell 5. And you can also follow Whole Hog Sports at Whole Hog Sports on Twitter as well. Well, so long. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time here on the Whole Hog Podcast.